Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it's my honor to coordinate and host this program. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Now, during the pandemic, since we all still continue to shelter in, SPIRIT has become the perfect way for each one of us to engage in a virtual setting. Today, we are privileged to welcome back Dr. Dietze Berger of Lander College for Women, who's been with our SPIRIT program before. Today, Dr. Berger will be addressing the meaning and importance of meaning and purpose. It is my pleasure and honor to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Dr. Berger. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Okay. First of all, thank you, Representative Steinig. I have to tell you, it's been a pleasure to join you in the past, and I am certainly looking forward to joining you today, although quite frankly, I am somewhat nervous because the program that we're about to do together is a program that is probably a very, very small taste on the entire topic. Quite frankly, it was very humbling when I started to look through some of the research and some of the literature on this and say to myself, "En la davar sof," because there really is a tremendous amount more to go. And what I'm going to say is we're going to look at the program in three ways. I think the flyer bulleted it out for you, but in each of these ways, a one-hour lecture would be insufficient also. So we're going to divide our 45 minutes into three, maybe not exactly, but we're going to look at three things and basically hopefully get a taste of what it is on this topic that will want us to get more of a taste on this topic. And hopefully one of the things that we can do is, I guess, provide direction for future thoughts so that people can explore some of the topic on their own. So with that being said, I'm just going to share my screen. So for those of you who I am making eye contact with, and I am not going to be able to make eye contact with in a second because I won't see you. I look forward to seeing you at the end. And Imrat Hashem, I'm actually hoping that if we have questions, I think one of the things that Representative Steinig has done in the past is that people have put them into the chat. I don't know if I'll be able to answer all of the questions, but she can, since she is unmuted also, she can then field the questions and pass them on. Okay, so that's really what I am suggesting. With that, let me share my screen. Okay. Okay, we're gonna go from the beginning. Okay, so the importance of meaning and purpose. I think without looking at anything else, that's a topic that resonates with all of us, because it's something that we are naturally looking for in our lives. We are looking for what we can do so that we feel that we're getting up in the morning for a reason. We are looking for what we can do for others and together with others, and trying to contemplate what it is that we can use each day for to the greatest extent. With that being said, it's not surprising that there are tremendous psychological benefits to living and thinking that way. Obviously, and they're not actually listed on the slide, obviously the psychological benefits of living and thinking this way include things like having less depression and having a more positive outlook and being more optimistic. What really is quite amazing is that there are also concrete studies that really reflect evidence that it's not just psychological benefits, but there really is a tremendous mind-body connection. And that mind-body connection has been studied in a variety of different ways. So what we're going to do is like this. This project was started when Representative Steinig directed me to an article that appeared this January in the Washington Post. And the article, which is entitled "Boosting Our Sense of Meaning in Life," is an often overlooked ingredient in longevity. It was written by a woman named Marta Zaraska, who actually published the book, which is the focus of this article. One of the things she looks at is that the same way as healthy diet and exercise can really enhance physical well-being and longevity, looking for meaning in life and seeing our purpose can do the same thing. The article really states the fact that there's research that indicates that having purpose in life can lower the mortality risk by 17%, okay? It also lowers cortisol levels. Cortisol is a very important stress hormone. It's involved in the fight or flight reaction. It really helps our metabolism going, and that's really, really wonderful. However, when stress is consistent and there are levels of cortisol are too high, one of the things that ensues is that there can be more in the way of anxiety and depression and heart disease, as well as difficulty with digestion, sleeping, weight gain, and memory. That's a lot of things that being able to kind of focus on purpose in life can really affect and impact, both in the positive sense, as well as removing some of the negative. So what she discovered was that when people have a supportive network of family and friends, which is certainly something that contributes to meaning in life, it lowers the mortality rate by about 45%. And honestly, one of the things that I think was of tremendous concern to all of us for the past year is that our access to those social networks has been somewhat limited. And I really want to thank the OU for doing this and for doing so many other things in this regard to really create social networking, to have people, I think it's actually a very, very nice thing, to have people look into the other boxes and see names of people that they recognize and be able to kind of say to yourself, I haven't spoken to someone, let me reach out and call them, because that social element in one's life gives a person a sense of meaning and has tremendous impact on our physiology and our health and longevity. What's really interesting is that when you compare that healthy social network in terms of its impact on longevity and its ability to lower mortality by about 45%, and we compare that with exercise, this is not a plug against doing exercise. We all need to exercise, and I'm seriously plugging for it, but exercise, which is touted across the board, has been found to lower the rates of mortality by 23%. Interestingly, and along these lines, volunteering has been found to increase longevity or lower the rate of mortality by 22%. So all of these things together really make a very, very good case for why people want to look for meaning in life. One of the things that the author of this article and the author of the book, her book is called Growing Young, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. One of the things that she noted was that the predicted lifespan in Japan at birth is about 6 years longer than it is in the United States. And when she spoke both to centenarians as well as to researchers on the topic, one of the things that they noted was this notion called, I'm gonna get it right, ikigai, okay? Ikigai is a Japanese construct that was developed on the islands. I'm gonna say, I found out that Okinawa is actually 150 islands, although the main island is called Okinawa, was developed on the islands of Okinawa and is something that is widely respected and practiced in Japan, to the extent that there are campaigns to really help people increase their ikigai, okay, and to increase that. And one of the things that we should know about Okinawa is that Okinawa is the place in the world that actually has the largest percentage of centenarians, with about 68 centenarians for every 100,000 people, which is huge, okay? So if there really is something to this, and research is indicating that it is, what we're looking at is potentially an opportunity to find things that can help us feel better and live longer. So let's look at this for a second. The notion of ikigai is like this. Iki means life. Gai means meaning. Finding a life of meaning. If you look at the two diagrams on the screen, they're really, one is an expansion of the other, but finding a life with meaning involves doing things that you love, doing things that you are great at, doing things that you feel are important, that some part of the world needs, and doing things that you are paid for. That central overlap of all four of these things is where ikigai is personal to each individual. And Japanese are encouraged to find their purpose, to say to themselves, what is my goal in life and how am I going to concretize and actualize that? So now let's look at the second side of the screen and let's look at the other part of the diagram. Okay, this actually works. You can probably see the cursor moving around. So if you look at the overlap between what you love and what you are good at, here this one was what you are great at, what you see in that overlap is something that's called passion. If you look at the overlap between what you love and what the world needs, you come up with the notion of mission. The overlap between what the world needs and what you can be paid for is vocation. Those may be the jobs that we select for ourselves. And what you are good at and what you can be paid for can be your profession. So ikigai is a verb. When Japanese look at this verb, they say to themselves, what is my personal mission? What is my personal role? What gives me meaning? And things like to build and to give and to educate and to entertain, all of those things fall into this category. And the idea is that once I come up with that notion, it can manifest itself in a variety of different ways. Okay. Now, the issue is as follows. Let me go back for a second. The issue is as follows. The philosophy in general America is not like that. In general America, people are very much living in the moment without necessarily having a bigger sense of purpose or a bigger sense of meaning. This is not an assumption. This is actually based on research. Obviously, there are plenty of people who have that sense of mission, who have that sense of meaning. And among those in religious and spiritual communities, that is certainly the case. The question is though, A, can we do better for ourselves, even if we already have that? And B, what can be done across the country to really help people feel that they're here for a reason, right? But before we answer that question, I would just want to spend a couple of minutes looking at just some more of the research. We're not going to go into it in such great detail. But if you look at the top study was done with almost 8,000 people of the age of 50 and over. And what they did was they collected data on these people, and they collected data including whether they felt their life had a purpose and whether they felt their life was meaningful. They collected that data by using something called the Rife Scales of Psychological Well-being. And Carol Rife, who developed the Rife Scales, is a researcher and a professor at Yale. She is working, I mean, literally, like when you Google her name, you'll get 20 articles and many of them will be from 2020. She is working tirelessly to look at the impact of meaning on different aspects of physical and psychological function. So the constructs that are measured in the scale, which you would say to yourself actually really do tie very understandably with the idea of meaning, are a desire for an actual self-acceptance, establishment of quality ties, which goes along with our understanding of the need for relationships, It's a sense of autonomy. I can choose what I can do. It's an ability to navigate and to manage my realities. And it's the pursuit of meaningful goals and a sense of purpose in life, which is really what we are looking at. So based on that scale, this study, which had over 7,000, almost 7,000 people, it was like 6,795 or something like that. What they found was that people who possessed life purpose, the top level of scoring and possessing life purpose compared with the bottom level of scoring and possessing life purpose, over the 4-year period from the time that the study was started till the study was concluded, those people had a much lower rate of mortality from all causes. Okay, and that's something very, very important for us to recognize. A similar study looking at purpose in life and its relationship to all-cause mortality and cardiovascular events, what it did was it was a meta-analysis. It looked at 10 different studies that were done over a pretty short period of time looking at this issue. And in doing such, they could really look at what all of the literature is kind of saying together. And when it comes to cardiovascular events, the ability of finding meaning and having purpose is tremendously helpful. It is not as helpful in reducing mortality from things like cancer, but it is also helpful in the ability to cope with difficult situations in life. And that is what we are going to move forward and look at. So what makes a person see life as being meaningful? It's a feeling that we matter to the world in some way. It's a belief and feeling that we're here for a reason, that our life has a purpose, okay? Going back to the idea of ikigai, purpose in life and life worth living. Giving to others and helping others, whether it's virtually, whether it's practically, has a tremendous impact in helping a person see life as being meaningful. And as we said before, religious and spiritual beliefs regarding human existence and a relationship to a higher power really gives life a very deep level of meaning that can manifest itself across the board. When we see that our behaviors, what we're doing, aligns with what we believe, with our values, that also helps us see our life as being well-lived, as being meaningful. Okay, so we're gonna come back to that slide later. This is not a new idea in psychology. When we look at the idea of existentialism and we look at the work of Viktor Frankl, we are very much struck by the importance of meaning. Viktor Frankl was an Austrian, many of you probably know more about him than I do, although I really was very moved by Man's Search for Meaning and by the whole premise of logotherapy. But the idea that he had was that life is not made unbearable by circumstances, but it's made unbearable by a lack of meaning and purpose. He was a Holocaust survivor, and he saw really the worst that mankind could inflict on mankind. And with that, the will to live was something that was obvious and distinguished many survivors from many who didn't. The idea that I'm living for something bigger than me, that there's something beyond what we're experiencing now, there's something to work toward and look forward to, whether it was a loved one, and he mentions the image of his wife coming to mind, whether it was a project, whether it was a project, he had a manuscript that wasn't finished. The belief that there is something beyond this, there's something that I want to accomplish, there's something in the future that gives my life, that can give my life meaning, was something that he really ascribed to. And he developed a system of therapy. It's considered the third school of Austrian therapy, and it's called logotherapy. Logo meaning meaning. I really particularly was drawn to this quote from Man's Search for Meaning, which is a quote that Frankl attributes to a philosopher who named, I'm gonna say Nietzsche, but if I am mispronouncing it, please feel free to say so. Not that you can talk because you're all muted. Okay, and basically what he said is like this: those who have a why to live can bear almost any how, Anyhow, the how comes from having the why. The reason for living can allow one to figure out how one is to live. He also communicated with many other prisoners in camp. And one of the things that I came across in an interview with him was that he was confronted by two people who were at a point where they were ready to really end everything because the suffering was unbearable. And there's no judgment of anyone who couldn't handle that. But what he asked each of them was there something in their future that they would want to live for? Is there someone who's depending on them? And one of them actually had a daughter who was really the center of his life. And he really sent the message that this is an opportunity. We're being questioned by life daily and hourly. And the answers that we give, the responsibility that we have to the life that we've been given and to the lives of others is something that can give our life meaning. One of the things that I found particularly important, especially when we're looking for meaning, is we think in three tenses. We think in past, present, and future. And very often there's a fear that as people grow older, they think about the paths not taken and they start reflecting on things in a negative way. Or on the other side, they see the people who, you know, are fresh out of school getting jobs and recognize that they are way more qualified. And yet these young people are getting some of those jobs. One of the things that Frankl had was a very important perspective on the past. And that perspective on the past, including positive and negative, is what he said, instead of possibilities, I have realities in my past. Not only the reality of work done and loved, but of sufferings bravely suffered. These sufferings are even the things of which I am most proud, although these are things that which cannot inspire envy. Okay, the idea of being able to look back on the past number of years and have that sense of self, that sense of integrity, gives meaning to all kinds of things that we have looked at and all kinds of things that we have done. And I think it's just an important thing for us to consider. Okay, he was also very focused on this idea of self-transcendence of human existence. It's not just about me. There's something bigger. There's someone else. And what he says very simply is the more one forgets himself by giving himself to a cause. I'm sorry, but my screen is blocked here, so I'm going to go back for a second. By giving himself to a cause, to another person to love, the more he actualizes himself, and the more he's able to kind of step outside of himself and find meaning in his life. Okay, with that being said, we're going to fast forward to the 1990s, and we're going to look at some of the ideas of Martin Seligman. Martin Seligman is a psychologist in U of P. He has written a tremendous number of popular books. They're very enjoyable popular books. One of them is called Learned Optimism. One of them is called Flourish. These are certainly things that are worth reading, but he is known as the father of positive psychology. And positive psychology is actually based on the ideas of some of the existential therapists. Positive psychology is based on the notion that psychology is not just about dealing with making mental illnesses better. It's not just about solving problems. It's actually about the idea to live a happier and healthier and more meaningful existence. And with that, he has coined an acronym of several terms that he refers to as PERMA. And he says that when a person is trying to construct a life that is a life of well-being, there are several things that are of real import. The first is positive emotion. Hey, just one second. Let me just get to where I am up to. Sorry. Okay, the first is positive emotion. When we look at positive emotion, we can look at two areas of positive emotion. We can look at the area of enjoyment, and we can look at the area of pleasure. Pleasure is about my enjoying my physical experiences in the now. I can enjoy a good cup of hot chocolate. I can enjoy the smell. I can enjoy the texture. I can enjoy the taste. That's pleasure. True enjoyment, he says, comes from intellectual pursuits and doing things, again, that we believe are, that we believe are creative and contributing. So the positive emotion that I get from being involved in activities that I believe are creating things, that being involved in intellectual pursuits, that's what he calls enjoyment. And while pleasures are fleeting, enjoyment is much longer lasting. Engagement is another idea. And one of the things that tends to happen when people are involved in various things is that even though I am physically present and doing one thing, my mind can actually be elsewhere. Being truly engaged in an activity means that I'm almost losing myself in that activity. My focus is on what I am doing now, right? So right now I am sitting here with you and I am, I hope, engaged in this lecture. I am not thinking about cooking for Shabbos or sweeping my floor. Now I am because I brought them up. But the reality is that the way the world works with our smartphones and our emails is that engagement actually is more and more difficult because we are involved in multiple things. And being able to kind of put everything else away and almost say, this is what I'm doing and let myself really get into something is also something that is a core aspect of psychological well-being and happiness. Relationships. Relationships are things that I can't stress enough. I think I said this in one of the earlier lectures that I did for Spirit, but we have a term called social distancing. And very early on, someone corrected that and said, no, it shouldn't be called social distancing. It should be called physical distancing because people need people. We need each other. And some of the feedback that I've gotten over the last number of months is that people have actually reached out and kindled relationships from afar that they may have neglected because it was just as easy to communicate with somebody on Zoom who's in Israel as it was to communicate with a neighbor who was six blocks away. So the idea of relationships and not being alone, lo tov heyos ha'adam levado, is not just about a man finding a wife, or it is about the idea that relationships are central to our being. Finally, the idea of meaning. And when Seligman looks at meaning, he looks at it more in that transcendent way. It's about connecting to something larger than one's self. It's not just about me, it's about a greater purpose. I'm doing things because I believe that these things will not only benefit me in the short term, I am doing things because, along with the Japanese construct, I believe that they are meaningful and important for the world. And lastly, we have accomplishments. And accomplishments are extremely important. And going back to the perspective of Frankl on the past, the understanding that I have accomplished in the past, I am proud of those accomplishments, and I am looking for things that I can accomplish now. Accomplishments don't only have to be about the end product and the full thing. The process of accomplishing is extremely important. So when a person gives themselves the recognition for steps that they've taken, this morning, you know, I got up 20 minutes earlier, or today I called three friends and I'm feeling more connected. Those small accomplishments are things that are worth noting and highlighting because they actually will motivate. They will actually motivate us to keep going and to keep doing more. So going back to this quote from Seligman at the bottom, just as the good life is something beyond the pleasant life, the meaningful life is beyond the good life. So seeing that there's something larger than me and the here and now is something that really makes sense, that it doesn't only help with psychological well-being, but it can also lead to helping with physical well-being. Okay. Every one of us was created with strengths and weaknesses. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created each of us with different strengths. And those strengths, hopefully, we are at stages in life where we are utilizing those strengths. There are some strengths that are our signature strengths, strengths that really identify and define us. And when we use our signature strengths and we create meaning and we create a meaningful life, and when we use those same strengths to forward knowledge, power, or goodness, that life is filled with meaning. And what Seligman says, and this is the perfect segue to our third segment, and if God comes at the end, such a life is sacred. The idea of meaning and transcendence, and it's not just about me, it's about what I can do and about my responsibility, given that I am someone who has been created by Hashem, is a tremendous thing. So with that, I want us to look at Mesilas Yesharim. Mesilas Yesharim is the classic Musar Sefer by the Ramchal. And Musar in general is about how to lead and live one's life. So this is the quote from the beginning of Perek Aleph, not from the beginning of the Hakdama. And it says, Yesod HaChasidus, HaChasidut V'shoresh HaAvodah HaTmima, the foundation of piety and the roots of pure worship, is that a person needs to clarify and make true for himself what is his specific responsibility in his world. And where should he put his focus in all the things that he does throughout his life? Now, the Mesilas Yesharim is not Ikiyagi. This is not just about signature strengths and about finding where my passion exists, because the Mesilas Yesharim goes on to say that really the Shoresh HaAvoda and Yesod HaChasidus and the Chova in the world is about being able to connect with Hashem. The issue here is that it is written directly to the individual, Machovato Olamo, what is his role in his world. We each have slightly different worlds, even identical twins who are being raised in a house with the same parents have slightly different experiences, and they have slightly different strengths in all likelihood. Those strengths and those experiences will hopefully be reflected in the way that I, as an individual, will look for opportunities to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the next slide, I think actually goes very much back to the beginning. And the next slide says, Darash Bar Kapra, Bar Kapra investigated, is a parsha ketana shekol gufei Torah tzluyin ba. What small verse has all of the tenets of Torah connected to it? And the verse is a verse from Mishle, where Shlomo says, "Behold, drachecha da'ehu v'hu yasher orchosecha." It is a person's responsibility to recognize Hashem in all that he does, and as a result, I mean that's one interpretation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will smooth and pave his ways. Okay, now I'm sorry. Okay, I figured out how to do this. I don't know if you all have little, I think they're called thumbnails, where you see people on the screen. My thumbnails were blocking what I was seeing. So before we get to the quotes on the page, on the one hand, b'chol drachecha da'ehu means that I can really look for Hashem throughout my day, throughout my life. When I get the parking spot right in front of my office and I say, this is something that Hashem made possible, that Hashem caused to happen, and I express that gratitude, that's enhancing the meaning in my life because it's having me think a little bit bigger than the here and now. It's not just about getting the parking spot. It's about that fact that that parking spot was something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu facilitated in one way or another. We're looking always with things like this. We're looking in the retrospect, and we're looking from a positive angle. One of the things that we want to stay clear of is trying to, and this is something that Frankl was very clear about, trying to interpret the why behind things on the larger level. That's not something that we're capable of. The what can I do, the who can I give to, the what am I working towards, those are all things that we're looking at. So let's look at Rabbeinu Bechaye here. So what Rabbeinu Bechaye says is, "Shetasim kol kavanasecha b'chol pu'lasecha tachlis achatz," that one should put all of his intentions in every action towards one purpose. And what is that purpose? V'hi avodat Hashem yitbarach. I mixed my Ashkenaz and my Sephardic pronunciations, and I apologize. I guess that's one of my signature strengths. Okay, v'hi avodat Hashem yitbarach. It's the worship of Hashem. It's the subservience that I have and the recognition that I have of Hashem in my life. V'hu sheyechaven ha'adam kesheyochal v'yishteh v'yishan v'yorer. When I do these things, what am I doing? I am focusing, I am thinking about the fact that each of these things is important for my well-being. And why is my physical being, my physical health important? So that my limbs, which house the nefesh, will be intact and healthy. I am doing these things for the strengthening of my body. And at the same time, I am doing these things so that my nefesh, which is the aspect, the element that will be able to recognize and connect with Hashem, will be in its proper state. The Rambam let me finish this. B'nimtza shiyu kol pu'lotav hagufaniyot hativiot b'chlal darchei Hashem yitbarach. What the outgrowth of this is, if I sleep for the purpose of my health, and my health is for the purpose of worshiping Hashem. So this is if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. That all of my physical actions, hativiyot, the natural actions, b'chlal darchei Hashem yitbarach, considered in the framework of the ways of Hashem. Kevan shaloki ve'im bahem ela lashamayim. V'zehu v'chol ma'asecha yiyu l'shem shamayim. Chol ma'asecha yiyu l'shem shamayim is a quote from Perkei Avos, that all of my actions should be for the sake of shamayim. And in essence, throughout the literature, both of these constructs are used. B'chol drachacha da'ehu v'yu yasher arhosecha. So by making a point and recognizing that my actions have an impact on my body, and my other actions have an impact on my soul, and I am taking care of both of those, what ends up happening is that I can then say that those actions themselves take on an element of direct worship of Hashem. Okay, now with that, the Rambam in Hilchos Deos says something very, very similar. And basically what he says in Hilchos Deos is that when I am engaged in these actions, I should really focus my ideas, my thoughts on the fact that I am doing these things l'shem shamayim. I am doing these things b'chol drachecha da'ehu. The Rambam in Shmona Prakim actually includes two other things in the fifth parak. He talks about the idea that it's not just about my physical needs, But when a person has a need for aesthetic pleasures, such as when a person is down, or when a person needs to keep themselves up and they go and they see beautiful things, both, all of those things fit under that same framework. So when the person is down and they listen to music for that purpose, or when a person is in a state where they want to prevent downness and they listen to these things, or they see beautiful sights, that's also part of Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu. It is also possible to look at the idea of Harchavat HaNefesh, that by expanding my soul through appreciating the Niflot HaBorei, through appreciating the things that Hashem has created, I am more capable of seeing Hashem in my daily life. So all of these things are not just then permissible, but they are desirable. Okay, now, the issue is like this. Shetasim kol kavanatecha b'chol pulatecha tachlit achat. What does that mean? Does that mean every time I take a bite of an apple, it's not just that I say borei pri ha'etz, which is a recognition of the fact that Hashem created this apple, but as I chew the apple, I think about the fact that this is to make my body stronger and to keep my teeth strong? The issue is that that's actually not possible. It's not possible, excuse me. It's not possible when one davens to both contemplate the Perush HaMilim, what they are saying, as well as to contemplate the fact that they are standing in front of Hashem. So the Gemara in Zvachim has a principle that says, Kol ha'oseh al dat rishona hu oseh. Whenever a person does something, their initial intention is counted throughout the thing. So when I say, you know, when we have the Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid in front of the shul, or when I say, Hashem Svasai Tiftachu Fiya Gedila Secha, right? I am standing and recognizing that I am standing in front of Hashem, but I can't simultaneously think about two things at the same time. Okay, with that, along similar lines, I said the Chol Ma'asecha Yiyu L'Shem Shamayim. Rabbeinu Yonah basically says a very similar thing. Kol Tzorfei Gufcha Yiyu L'Avodat Borecha U'L'Davar HaGoreim Avodato. All the things that I do should either be directly for Hashem or for something that will enable serving Hashem. Such that, and this goes back to the idea of Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu, what Rabbeinu Yonah is directing us to is that when I see an opportunity, my job is to weigh that opportunity and to say to myself, is this going to be something that's going to bring me closer to Hashem or not? Now, just a second. Okay. Okay, so with that, I am going to just go back to something that we said at the beginning, kind of in form of summation. When we look at a meaningful life and we look at the things that we do on a daily basis, the things that give us a sense of meaning are things that are directed and motivated by meaningful goals. If in my larger life, I am motivated to help others, and I am motivated to help others because helping others is important, and it's also important from a halachic standpoint. If I believe that my existence matters to others, which is something that I think is extremely important, and I think some of us often underplay and don't recognize how much we matter to each other at a given point. When I seek out meaningful relationships and when I do things that are meaningful to me and fill my time with them, I give myself a sense of meaning And by having that overarching sense of purpose, such as in Behold Racha Chadaehu, I am giving my life a sense of continuity where things really add up with each other. Okay, so that's where I am going to stop. I don't know how much time, how much time we have. I want to really thank Rebbetzin Steinegg for arranging this. I guess if there's anybody who has any questions that they have put into the screen, or if anybody wants to ask any questions, I'm happy to try to answer.
Thank you so much, Dr. Berger. I haven't seen any questions yet. I think you've given us all a lot to think about. So maybe people are just kind of digesting, and maybe we'll be hearing from people. If anything comes my way, I will certainly forward it to you.
Okay.
I don't see anything in the chat yet.
Okay. I want to thank you, and I want to for arranging this program and for everything that you've been doing to really create the cohesive feeling of community that people really benefit from and need, and for inviting me to be part of that community every so often. So thank you very much.
It is our pleasure to have you, and you'll be coming back again. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Okay, call to
further on, maybe to go further on this.
Okay.
So thank you so much. A question just came in. Can you explain the connection with diabetes?
So the answer is, I can't explain that 100%. I'm not a medical doctor, but I do think the fact that meaning in life is correlated with lower levels of cortisol, and cortisol is that stress hormone that when it's present for too long or in too great an amount, really causes negative things. One of the positive things about cortisol is that it regulates and deals with our metabolism. One of the issues in diabetes is that the ability to metabolize sugar is compromised. And that is, I think, one of the ways that there's that interplay. And it is actually interesting, because one of the things that I did come across while I was doing looking for different types of things was the fact that there actually are some medications for diabetes type 2 who work on the system through the cortisol method. And I guess, the pros and the cons that we mentioned at the very beginning from cortisol are sometimes very much evident there. Okay, I hope that was somewhat of a helpful.
Any advice on how to move beyond the past and using the now to prepare for a meaningful future?
That's a very, very good question, because the idea is this minute, this now, is the only time this minute and this now exists. And I think when I have an overarching view of what I'm trying to accomplish, which is very hard to think about at all times, and I say to myself, I can do this at this point, even if I don't necessarily feel like doing it at this point, I can kind of use that now power and motivate myself to do things that I consider to be meaningful. That's how I would view the connection. I hope that was in keeping with what you were asking.
Okay. I think that does it. Okay, I don't see any other questions now, so I'm just gonna have a couple of announcements.
Okay.
Okay, so next week, we will be having a session on health issues on Tuesday, addressing the awareness and prevention of colon cancer. And Thursday will be our last session before Pesach. We're coming back after Pesach, don't worry. But the last session before Pesach, and the title of that one is, Why is there a coffee advertisement at your Seder? The story of the berry that looked like a bean, which is the story of the Maxwell House Haggadah, and many of us are certainly very familiar with that. And we'll be hearing from the advertising company that deals with, that's been doing the Maxwell House Sagada for like a ton of years. Okay, and I think that's gonna be fascinating. At this time of the year, when so many are giving to tzedakah, we ask that everyone consider the Spirit Initiative, which has been providing important services for the past year. We will be celebrating the first anniversary of our Zoom Spirit after Pesach with new branding, that's a new logo, and a new webpage that will have all of our archives and upcoming programs in the same place. So we're very excited about that. That'll be, you'll be seeing that, I think, right after Pesach. In addition, if you'd like to ever honor or memorialize a loved one at a future program, please be in touch with me directly. So I want to wish everybody a good day, a good Shabbos, be safe and healthy. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you so much, Dr. Berger, for yet another wonderful program.